Blog Talk Radio.
Dedicate our lives to this sport. We do thousands of sit-ups in camp. We run hundreds of miles, you know, for the ones that take it serious. And we just dedicate ourselves fully to our craft, man. We watch tape. We attitude. We booty, and we go into that fight just to land on the line.
Football fans, the College Ball Show is back. He's Marshall, I'm Chris, and we're here to discuss, debate, and banter over college football. A quick reminder, though, if you do like college basketball, we'll be switching gears next week. We'll be doing the College Ball Show featuring college basketball all the way till April to the national title game, and then we'll switch our focus once again to the NBA playoffs. We run that all the way to the NBA Finals, the NBA Draft, and, of course, the always exciting free agency. But that's neither here or there because the College Ball Show is still on college football. We got ourselves a rematch in the national title game, Alabama versus Clemson. Of course, as this show goes on, we're not going to be here all day. It's not going to be a two-hour show or nothing like that, but we are going to get into the preview and debate and predictions for the title game. Like I said, Bama versus Clemson, the rematch. You don't really get rematches too often, especially in the old system. It would have been tough to get a rematch just in general because if I go back two systems, first the BCS because you only have one and two, and let's be honest, if there was going to be a rematch and there was a battle between one-loss teams and they figure, well, last year's national title game, we'll give this other team a shot. And then if you flip back even further, it was hard to get a rematch because number one would face number six and number two would face number nine just because of how the conference alliance worked out in the bowl games. You know what I mean? So very tough. I do remember, certain games, Florida State, Miami, of course, Notre Dame and Colorado. We talked about that before, that ESPN 30 for 30, covered that well. You know, that was kind of a rematch in a sense, you know what I mean? But you don't get them much. Let's put it that way. Sometimes you'll get a rematch within the season, and that's even harder. Of course, Alabama and LSU had that game years ago, and that turned out to be just a stinker. What was it, 21-0 or something like that? But anyway, we are going to get into the title game. We're not going to lead with it. Before we break it down, we'll probably get into some details and news off the field. Of course, we're going to talk about our guy Lane Kiffin. Kind of funny how this news came up, and we have a Kiffin quota over here. So, of course, we got to cover it, Marshall. You know what I mean? We have to cover it only because of our quota. So we're going to get into that. Will Lane Kiffin's exit, mutual, so to speak, anyway, will that affect the play calls? Will that affect the game plan? We'll discuss that, of course, like I said, off the field. Some things hit home. We'll talk about the Gophers' new coach. And just talk, the last time we did a show was a chunk, it was a while ago now. So, we're going to talk about that whole thing with the Gophers and just a variety of stuff. We are going to minorly – now, we're already talking last Monday and even, further back. So we are going to talk about the rest of the bowl season a little bit. We're not going to spend 50 minutes, though. We don't want to bore you because we do realize that that was, you know, a chunk of days ago now. Obviously, heading into our last show, though, not this Monday, but last Monday, or was it Tuesday? I can't remember. But we were talking about how the bowl season has been, you know, pretty lame, pretty calm, pretty tamed. Not much, couple of good games, but nothing really caught the eye of a college football. But man, did that change. It was a great, personally, it was a great bowl season for my teams. Minnesota and Miami both got a W. Minnesota somehow, some way, kept freaking the Cougars from Washington State to 12 points, and that touchdown was late too, so that was pretty fun. But there, I mean, after we talked about how, you know, let's be honest, how kind of stale and boring, and that's what happens when you have 413 bowl games, you know what I mean? So that happens, but we were talking about how stale it was, but then all of a sudden, Northwestern pulls a minor upset over Pitt in a fun game to watch. Kansas State holds off Texas A&M in a fun game to watch, 33-28. Utah gets by Indiana just barely, 26-24. Arkansas has a lead. Then Virginia comes back. They end up winning the game. We actually watched this at a bar, Granite City, South Florida, South Carolina. That was a good game. Stanford UNC 25-23, another great game. Georgia TCU was pretty good. It looked like they were going to kind of run away with it, but that turned out not to be the case. A decent game in the Cotton Bowl. Wisconsin kind of jumped out and never quite let Western Michigan back all the way in, but they did hang tough. I was kind of impressed the way that game started. It kind of looked like they were going to steamroll to me. And then obviously that Florida State-Michigan game, 33-32. That game and obviously the USC-Penn State game stands out for me. Another game that stands out was Oklahoma State just whooping on Colorado. You wonder if the whooping they took in the national, or not in the national, but the Pac-12 conference game stayed with them or something, 38-8. I don't know if they had the health of their quarterback now that I think about that, but Marshall, you can kind of just sum up the games now that we're over a week removed from some of these, and some almost a week and a half. But like I mentioned, that Florida State Michigan game was just classic, 33-32. And then obviously you have some rooting interest in this one, USC, Penn State. You know, USC starts like, I mean, they came out of the gates like they're trying to put up 100 points. They were flying out of the gate. It looked like, man, wow, USC is just going to roll. And then Penn State, like they do when they're down at times, they got down in the conference final against Wisconsin big as well. What was that, 28-7? Something like that. They came back from that. Next thing you know, Penn State, you know, I think it went like this, Marshall. I think it was four or five possessions where they didn't do anything, and it was like punt, punt, and maybe a pick or something like that. And then they went, I believe, six or seven straight possessions where they scored a touchdown. They ultimately got a 49-35 lead, and then USC comes storming back. Obviously, McSorley having a horrible, you know, that was a horrible pick, especially how he threw the ball, and it should have been picked, and he basically threw the same damn ball. And this time it did get picked, but it was a great game, Marshall. Like I said, if you want to kind of just sum up maybe some of the games that you watched, or especially we want to lead with that USC-Penn State. But overall, man, from the last time we talked, Marshall, not only off the field, like I said, we'll definitely get into because we got our quota. Otherwise, we wouldn't cover it. You know me, I never give you a hard time or anything like that. I would never do that to you. You know me personally, but wow, what a bowl season that was, dude! Full of tight ass games, dude.
Yeah, I got to start with USC. I honestly, after the game, I cried. I honestly cried because I mean, for Now, I'll admit that I did jump on a bandwagon in 2004. I never really had a true college football team to support. I've become a Wisconsin fan over the years because my best friend has a lot of family ties. And, I mean, growing up in Alaska, you don't really get high school – or, excuse me, college football, or really high school football for that matter. I mean, they play it. But I never really had a squad. So, obviously, USC being kind of a catchy team with Pete Carroll and Reggie Bush and Matt Leinart, it was obviously kind of intriguing. And I remember going to New Year's for Vegas, and it was the year when Vince Young played him in that title game, and that was one of the best college football games ever. And from that point on, I kind of, like, stuck with USC. So whenever I played, like, video games, I was always USC for a franchise. So anyways, from 2004 up until now, there hasn't been a whole lot of positivity. Unfortunately, Reggie Bush on that 2004 team led to some harsh punishments, kind of was a rippling effect, which had lasted for, honestly, up until this season. And I won't forget telling my buddy watching the game this year that I mentioned my best friend Ian, about how, man, this is the first year I feel like we're watching that team that had that swagger from 04, and they finally had a good coach that had guided them properly in Coach Elton, and you just felt there was some type of revival. And I mean, God, even had people saying they're one of the best teams in the country. And I know a Vegas poll doesn't matter, but Vegas, just for strictly if they were to play anyone, they were the second or third best team in the country. So it's kind of like, man, we've had a good season again. It's been a good run. I know we don't deserve to be in the title because we had some bad losses, but let's try and finish on a good note. And they come out against Penn State riding high. I mean, they have the home state advantage. obviously, Penn State traveled very respectably, but I would say that crowd was probably 70-30 or 65-35, but a hell of an environment. All the Penn State fans wore white. All the USC fans were in red. It was quite a game. As you mentioned, USC came out hot, and then Penn State, I'll give them some credit. I also think Lady Luck was on their side a little bit because while watching that game, there was some passes that Penn State threw that were very great deep passes. But some of those passes, I'm like, okay, that thing's got to get picked or that thing's got to fall to the ground. But no, that stretch you mentioned, Chris, to start off the show of about seven straight possessions, a couple of those plays to lead to those possessions, the scores were like, how did he catch that ball? Like,
especially the tip drill.
Yeah.
That tip drill one. You know, that one. That's kind of the thing. They just go deep. And that's why I mentioned before in midseason with the Gophers lost, because when you without corners, you're screwed without that team. But especially that tip drill one, dude.
Yeah, it was just so many passes where I was texting my friend. I'm like, dude, it's like we're at a roulette table in Vegas and we just hit red like 15 times. It's like, I mean, when's this luck going to stop? And again, part of it is luck. Part of it's guys running good routes. Part of it's quarterback throwing good passes. But some of the windows of those passes, I was like, oh, my Lord, you can't catch. Nope. Okay. What? Nope. Nope. Everything was getting caught. I'm like, Jesus. The kid, can you get much luckier? Like, come on. Something's got to go our way. And then when USC is down 14, still in the game with about 12 minutes to go, a fumble occurs, and a Penn State player lineman's fighting for a fumble, and he puts his hand on the ball, and then our guy takes it away. They grab possession of it just because his hand was on it for half a second, and I was like, oh. But then my man Sam, and I won't go on this for long, but I've been giving this kid credit all year because he has playing abilities that if you didn't know, you'd assume he'd be a junior and not a 19-year-old freshman. That kid stepped it up and made great passes. The USC drove down to make it a 7-point game. They got the ball back, and they tied it up late with about a minute and a half to go in a beautiful touchdown pass. I went nuts when USC tied it up with about a minute 20 to go. But then when Kirk Herbstreit showed the replay, and he's like, okay, so basically there's two safeties looking right at Sam Darnold, and he's going to fit the ball in between both of them over the top into his receiver's hands, and he'll do it easily. Herbstreit's like, you don't make that pass as a quarterback, and he just drilled it. And then finally, Lady Luck, the roulette table, it went black for one spin, and that interception got returned. They kicked the field goal, And I mean, I'm an emotional guy, but I teared up just because being a true sports fan and that loves my teams probably more than I humanly should, it was cool for USC to have a win that they've not had a big of a win in almost a decade. So for a fan that, I mean, I think this is our sixth or seventh year doing this show, I've always mentioned being a USC fan, but I've not had many moments to brag about it. Because whenever we've talked about big games, you or I have previewed it like, well, USC, you know, they got the players, but next day on our show, like, man, they had stupid personal fouls or the coaching wasn't organized or they did something dumb and, well, maybe the next time. And Oregon kicked their butt for quite a while and seems like they can never beat Stanford. So it was a very nice way to finish a great season they've not had in a while. I would say the future is incredibly promising with Sam Darnold as a freshman quarterback. I mean, I'll wrap up my little love fest here, but that kid's got skills, especially for a fresh. He made passes in that game, and to give Penn State credit too, their running back, holy God. Sam Darnold was a phenomenal player, and I kind of missed the boat on the running back because there was a couple of plays where Penn State's running back had where I was like, Jesus, it was like that 70-yard draw, and he literally ran past our entire defense. And it's tough to run past a fast defense in college football and make them all look slow. So it was kind of a competition of offensive wits. But very happy for USC to win. Like I said, it's the first big win they've had in a while, and I'm praying for health, continued success of Sam Darnold because that kid's he's got ice in his veins. When he made that beautiful touchdown pass to tie it up, you would have thought it was kind of in the first quarter. There wasn't really a massive celebration. It's like, all right, guys, let's go for the win. So a nice, fun game to watch, Chris, and good to see my team kind of get back on the map for a positive reasoning. And as you mentioned, clearly one of the best bowl games of the season. You could obviously say better than the two semifinals. I know it doesn't rank in that high in importance technically over it, but a phenomenal game to watch, along with Michigan, Florida State. Clearly, I don't have the heart involved in it that I do with USC, but also a very great game. It was back and forth, like come fourth quarter, it was kind of like, all right, guys, we got ourselves a football game. And every time you turn that, turn your head to look back, someone scored. Michigan came back and forth, Florida State came back and forth. And as we mentioned, Chris, we kind of both thought it'd be somewhat of a lower scoring game. And it was for the first 2.5 quarters, but then it kind of turned into a little bit of a shootout. And that Dalvin Cook had a couple of big breaks in the fourth quarter, which you both predicted just because he's a tough guy to bring down. But I will say I'll toss it back to you. When they ran that extra point back, I was just kind of thinking of Miami playing Florida State in the regular season, just of how extra points can be so weird, whether they're missed or returned. So you had the look on these the fans' faces of, okay, we scored a touchdown, we're about to go up four. And it's like, oh, wait, we just scored a touchdown, now we're only up one. The mentality and the looks on the faces of those people in Florida State were like, all right, man, we scored a touchdown, this is huge. Let's kick an extra point to go up four and kind of wrap this up with like 30 seconds to go to, oh, shit, we're up one, and now all of a sudden our defense has to get on the field. It was crazy to kind of see the 30-second transformation, Chris, of fans going from celebrating to, oh, that really just happened. Like, time to buck up again. Here we go. But that's why you got to love college football, my friend, because special teams, you're never quite sure.
Yeah, and even at the bar, people were like, as he's running, like, how many points is this? They didn't even know what the hell's going on. They're like, what's this going to be? What is this? Is it 1 point? They didn't even know while he's running, you know? It's funny. Some things happen in college football that you're like, oh, yeah, no, this has been in the rule book, dude, or, you know, just random stuff like that. But, yeah, overall, man, it was a great, great when it got to the meat and potatoes, like I mentioned a lot, when we get to the beef of the schedule, it paid off. Like I said, we're definitely not going to sit here and change history and act like that first couple weeks didn't suck. But, man, did we get a payoff. And maybe that's a good example why there should only be maybe just 30 in general, period. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
but 30 bowl games is just for the audience. I knew you know what I meant, but yeah, man, that was a whole lot of fun. That game was just back and forth, and to do it on seven straight possessions, a touchdown. It was like, wow, what the hell's going on? But I was surprised about the score in that game as well, in the fact that Florida State were able to protect Francois a little bit. I think those extra practices helped them come up with some schemes to try to keep their young quarterback. Speaking of another young quarterback, there's a lot of young quarterbacks in college football, man. We're definitely stock locked and loaded. So great, great bowl season, no doubt about it. Really, really fun. And then obviously, well, a week ago right now the ball would have been kicked off because it's 2:21 in the central time zone. So the ball would have been kicked off on Bama in Washington. Washington comes out, scores that 7 points right away, and then basically does nothing after that. even though the score was contained, it didn't really amount to much. Bama just ran the ball. I think they threw the ball for like 14 times or something for 57 yards. It was just smash mouth, and oh, by the way, what do you know? They get a touchdown not from their offense. I can't believe it. And it was pretty disrespectful. Yeah, but yeah,
I called
call.
It
you
on our show
way
that
out
Bama
of limb.
Would have a non-offensive touchdown. I want a pat on the back.
Way out on the limb on that one. You know how disrespectful that one was, too? He just grabbed it and said, oh, excuse me, and bumped the dude over like, yeah, you're in my way, dude. Like, it was a disrespectful one, too, man.
Oh,
that was a bad one, dude. It was hilarious.
Speaking of that. Sorry to cut, but that moment exactly, I just remembered it because I remember I was watching the game with my dad, and it was 10-7 at that point. It was a 3-point game. There was like a minute and a half left, and I said before that drive started, I said exact words to my dad. I'm not making this up. I said, if you're Washington, you got to run out the clock and go into halftime. It is a 3-point game. You need to stay safe, be conservative, get into half. Don't do something stupid.
What they have in the clock?
Second or third play of that drive. I mean, a minute 30 left, you really think you're going to...
What was on the clock when they started it?
I'm sorry?
What was on the clock when they started that drive? I can't remember how much was left.
They had about a minute 30 left, buddy. So I'm like, dude,
you can't
you're
take
right
a
in
knee
the game.
With a minute 30 left, though, dude. You can't take a knee with a minute. I know what happened.
I'm not saying take a knee. I was just saying that I believe you should run. Don't just run the ball. And run the ball, and if they stop you on three runs, you punt. Because Washington's defense in that first half had played tremendous, but I just remember, I'm like, God, don't get too fancy here, because Bama's defense always has that kind of swaggerness to it, and you don't want to do something to lose momentum. And again, I get that would be a conservative standpoint, but make them call timeouts or just do three runs. And they do this kind of like, you know, like maybe net 1 yard pass, or maybe it's even kind of a backwards pass, but some type of wide receiver screen. And it's like the Bama's guy's eyes just lit up, and all of a sudden you got a pick six, and you just went from being in a field goal close game to now you're down 10, and Bama's getting the ball coming out after half, and that momentum you've had of a tremendous first half is gone. And I know the announcers kind of talked about it half. And again, I get you can see both sides. Maybe you do break the play. Odds are against it. But I just remember, I'm like, God, if you're Washington, don't do something stupid. Go into half. Keep the 3-point game. I'm not saying take a knee. Maybe that when I addressed it came off that way. But I was just thinking, run the ball. Be smart. And keep it simple. And you do this kind of wide receiver screen dink play. And all of a sudden,
but
touchdown.
But that was pretty
like,
simple
oh,
for them, though. It was just a bad pass. But it was pretty simple. It wasn't like it was like some detailed
fair.
Or some bomb or something.
True. But they made that mistake. They went from, oh, dude, we were just down 3 to, oh, man, we just had the momentum. We just kind of got a jab to the gut, and now we're down 10. And now we're kind of reeling back. So that was a very unfortunate turn of events for them because, and again, I'm not saying the Bama would have lost or anything, but the mentality of, guys, we're down 3. Like, let's go to – oh, dude, we just had a pick six going into half. The confidence is obviously at a different standpoint from there. and that was a crucial
interception. Yeah, I think the quarterback just made a bad throw. I don't think it was like a bad play call, to be honest. I think the quarterback made a bad throw. He shouldn't have just thrown the ball. It wasn't there, obviously, because the guy just took the route over. It disrespected
True.
Him. It was hilarious, dude, because he just kind of bounced off him after that, too, dude. It's like, excuse me, I'm trying to get to the end zone. Do you know where it is? You know, it's hilarious, dude. It's just one of those, it's kind of like big brother, little brother, like, you know, like, if your little brother, like, you got your hand out on the top of his head and he's trying to, like, tackle you or something, you could just hold him off like that. That's what it felt like.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Like a man and a boy. You know, it's just like, excuse me. But anyway, you're right, though. That was a big momentum, booster, no doubt, especially going in the half.
Mm-hmm.
We always know going in the half, especially with the ball, like you mentioned, it definitely was a key moment in the game. And as far as the other semifinal, Clemson waited to have their best performance all year long. They've been up, they've been down. They did play great against Louisville. They did play pretty good against Florida State. But they were inconsistent this year. Of course, they only had one loss as far as how they looked. And sometimes we kind of got lost in the last year in trying to compare the teams. And I know that it's easy to do because you go, well, shit, the last 6 weeks last year, dude, they closed so well. And it just doesn't seem like the same team. And then you start to think about stuff they lost on defense and you start to add it up. And why is Deshaun, even though he's throwing for a lot more yards and touchdowns, he's throwing for more picks too. And, you know, you're just kind of running through the stuff. And it's not like you're just trying to rip them out of nowhere, but there's some things happening where you're like, huh, that's weird. And they just, there was only a couple games where they really looked like themselves. Well, I'll tell you what. You saved the best for second last, I should say, because this isn't last, obviously. But
True.
Clemson just comes out and plays probably the best game of their, you know, of their university. I mean, seriously, I know that sounds like a big statement. And, of course, in the 80s, I think it was like 85 or 83, they did win a national title game. So, obviously, that's big. but – I mean, the way they did it, Marshall, was so impressive. Watson was on. He had an early pick, but then he was on in the air, actually early two picks. Then they got it on the air, and they also were able to run the ball, and that's something that, like I said, they're getting more passing yards. They're putting up more numbers. They obviously have, you know, some of that has to do with Mike Williams being back as well because he is a stud wide receiver. But this game, they managed to get over 205. They managed to get 18 and 15 carries out of Watson and Gallium. They managed to balance, and obviously in a game coming up that we'll break down, we got some things to talk about before we break that down. But you're going to need to run the ball. Obviously against Alabama. So overall, Clemson literally played their best game that I've seen under Dabo. And you could say the complete opposite. Not able to run the ball barely at all besides Samuel every once in a while on kind of a trick play or a reverse or, you know, nothing that really was sustainable, although he had some good numbers his average 11 a carry, but he only had six carries. They only had 88. They got sacked a bunch. When Barrett's not running the ball along with Weber, they're just not the same. And they just overall, as a team, you know, definitely look like a team that wasn't ready to either play or kind of look like what they are, which coming into this, not a lot of people thought they were a national title team. They thought they were just a top 10 team. But then what they did to Oklahoma, people were like, oh, smack. But it was kind of like the worst performance and the best performance. And now it sets up a rematch. And I'll let you talk about both games as well. Obviously, we don't want to go too recap because, like I said, we are a week removed from those games. But
sure.
Now we get rematch. And I'll just, you know, as we talk about this, I want to talk about the off-the-field stuff really quick with Lane Kiffin, and that'll go into the, you know, get us into the prediction as well. But I'm, you know, it's, we did give Clemson a tough time this year because it's hard not to, like I mentioned, think of last year in the way they closed the season. Sure, they had a competitive game with North Carolina, but they were a pretty good club last year, especially on offensive end. But this year, it was just so herky-jerky, so up and down. They did have to replace a bunch of defensive players, but the year before, they had to as well. That front seven, especially the front four, will need to play like that come Monday night. But I'm excited about a rematch, man. That's a pretty fun thing that you don't necessarily get a rematch from title games because it was just so hard to line up. And obviously the LSU-Bama thing just happened to work out because Oklahoma State had lost to Iowa State late in the season and Stanford had lost. So it was just one of those things that there was a rematch technically, but not from the year prior. So I'm definitely excited about that. And before we get into the preview and predictions, I do want to cover some off the field news. But you can give your take here on that and then kind of swing it in to Lane Kiffin. Then we'll get into news and then we'll get into predictions.
Yeah, you know, I do have to mention I did some great research and I basically copy and pasted a stat from ESPN into my mind for this show that in regards to that Clemson-Ohio State game, that was the first game in the illustrious, marvelous career of Urban Meyer to where he was shut out. First game in 194 games. God,
wow.
That was my day. First time ever he was shut out, so I was so sad to see that look on his face when the clock was winding down and he had 0 points on the board. You know, we talk about how their offense had their ups and downs at certain points this year, and as you mentioned, Clemson clearly brought out their A game, and again with special teams. We mentioned it with the USC game and the Florida State game, and Ohio State, I mean, again, I would venture to bet, Chris, that Clemson would have won that game. But Ohio State had a chance to make two field goals in the first quarter. I know what made first half, first quarter, but I believe they had two field goals very early in the game and missed them both.
Yep.
You know, having points on the board, even if it is three, is much different than shanking a field goal. And then the team goes down and scores a touchdown on you. It's kind of like a 10-point swing in a way. So, yep, I was deeply saddened. And I cheers on my New Year's toast when 2017 hit to my feeling of sympathy for Meyer as to his shutout
streak.
I bet
you got nice and drunk out of just remorse and pain.
I felt for the man, you know, for all the support I've always given him. It was a very unfortunate event for them to be shut out. Chris, I love it. Man, that made my day. But speaking with a coach who I truly do support, man, for the last, 3 years,
no
I've
matter what he does, he supports him. By the way, I want to tell that to the audience. You know, he can hate a coach for leaving his team, but that's what he did to Tennessee. But we won't get into that. No, I'm just kidding.
You know, I've been saying Roll Tide for quite a while. Now, when I first met Chris, I was an SEC hater. Growing up in Minnesota, you know, in the Midwest, all you heard was SEC is the best. And slowly you start to realize, well, at that point they were. But when my boy Kiffin, who I've always supported, I went there, I'm like, all right, Roll Tide, here we go. I'll support him. And now –
blindly.
Well,
I may add.
True. The Roll Tide era is over with Mr. Kiffin. You know, and there's a difference of kind of stories and opinions, and I'm sure – the ESPN story, I don't quite believe all the details how it occurred, but I guess here's my take on it.
You don't believe
the ESPN article.
the mutual thing. Like, we all, you know, we just talked about it, and it was the best thing. And so we mutually hugged and kissed, and we touched each other's dicks, and we left.
Yeah. So ESPN wants you to believe that, well, all of a sudden they're trying to make it, well, God, Kiffin and Saban hate each other, and all these unnamed sources of these coaches are starting to take shots at Kiffin. It's like, really, I'm sure some probably scumbag graduate assistant was like, man, this is my time to take a shot at Kiffin in the media. I'm going to remain unnamed, but, yeah, Kiffin has been missing practice, and he's a prick, and him and Saban aren't friends anymore. It's like, really? So you want me to believe that after 3 years of working together, all of a sudden now it's back to, man, Kiffin is such a jerk, and he doesn't know what he's talking about? It's like we're going back to this whole, like, barrage again? No. Now, clearly something did occur that caused the guys to go away, but it wasn't some mutual decision or, like, but it just bothered me that all of a sudden all these unnamed Bama sources, and yes, I'm heated up because I support Kiffin, were like, yeah, he's been skipping practices, and him and Saban hate each other. It's like, yeah, I'm sure we heard all those stories when they won a national title last year. And Kiffin has basically complimented Saban throughout his time there. You know, there was no shock they were an odd couple, but throughout the record, throughout the last couple of years, they've been on file saying, hey, we kind of work well off each other. Because Saban's a very strict, oriented guy.
Oriented?
Like, you got to do this on time. Yeah, whoops. I don't believe Nick Saban's Asian. But he's very strict and like, dude, you got to be here on time. And Kiffin just had an article come out in SI about how, yeah, you know, it was a different change of pace. That every morning at 7:30, we were here doing this as coaches. We were here doing this. And it brought him structure, which he did not necessarily have when he was coaching at USC and Oakland. And he complimented him with it. So we'll probably never get the true details. Clearly something occurred. But I just the way that, like, the graduate assistants were like, yeah, dude, shut up. I'm not going to pretend to go back that all of a sudden the Kiffin and Saban paid each other this whole time after 3 years when you'd heard positive reviews over the last couple of years. So something did go wrong, and I know that Kiffin had been spending time
experience last year with their defensive coordinator, and he managed to stay for the national title game. Something came up, obviously. Obviously we haven't had the semifinals, but I don't remember a time when this has happened. Right before a national title game, that there's something different about that, clearly.
Yeah, and I get from his perspective, he's looking for a house. Like the article mentioned, I was looking to get a house in Boca Raton and start recruiting and take on his new step. But I don't think Kiffin had this mindset of, I'm just going to stick it to the guys because – obviously, being a coach, I mean, when I find out this year, I mean, you fall in love with your players. No shock there. I don't think each after they beat Washington was, guys, I'm going to just quit going to meetings and I'm going to focus on Florida Atlantic and say, screw you for Clemson. So something went on there, but just the way ESPN covered it, like, yep, they've never been friends for 3 years. They hate each other. Kiffin's a lousy coach. He doesn't take things serious. They've never been buddies. Well, clearly something did explode to cause this, but this whole scheme of we're erasing the past 3 years of what has occurred there, and from a damn football standpoint, you got to love it. I don't know, just some BS. But from now, it puts me in a weird perspective because I haven't supported him all year. So now I'm like, I kind of want Clemson to win because there'll kind of be a sign of, if Bama struggles on offense, maybe you should have kept Kiffin around for a game. I'll say this and throw it back to you. Some of those specific plays that Kiffin drew up for the tight end in that championship game last year were plays he drew up at halftime. So all these Bama coaches are super happy, and, he was being a distraction. He's come late to practice. Well, let's see. Let's see about this guy who last year in your national title game when your defensive coordinator couldn't do a thing in the world to slow down Deshaun Watson, Kiffin called the right plays and brought this tight end from out of nowhere, done something all year. So I'm not saying that this is the biggest thing in the world, but to lose what is pretty much a top premier end offensive coordinator before the title game, if Bama's offense struggles, it's going to be like, huh, maybe there's going to be some people second-guessing who are like, well, God, maybe Kiffin was a good offensive coordinator, and that typical broad stroke of the media is going to change from Kiffin was a jerk to, man, if Bama loses, they never should have let Kiffin go. I wonder what the true story was there. So, as you mentioned, Chris, very odd timing. My only real standpoint that bothered me being a Kiffin fan is the way he got trashed all of a sudden. It's like they're pretending they were hate each other for 3 years, because I guarantee if him and Saban had butted heads constantly, Kiffin would have not have been coming around. And Bama was offering him a $2 million deal, it says in an article, to keep him from going to LSU to join Orgeron. So it's just a weird situation, but I'll stop there. But having him off the sidelines is a factor in the game, because this guy is called an offense that's done incredibly successful for the last couple of years, and that is a negative standpoint in some direction towards Bama.
Well, if you're going to bring up last year's game and the defensive coordinator, then we got to bring in the last game. So what happened in the last game? They couldn't throw the ball. They look like shit on offense, let's be honest. But obviously there's a blame to go around. Lane Kiffin's not walking out that door without blame. Clearly, he has something to do with this as well, because we've never seen this shit happen. And they had the experience just last year. You know what I mean? Just last year they had with Kirby. So, and he managed to hang around. And Clemson, you know, especially in college football, shit, we see in the pros now, actually, teams scoring a lot. So I wouldn't bring up that he saved the coordinator last year when we could say, well, the coordinator saved his ass this year, just last game. They didn't do shit on offense, really. So either way, I'm not going to act – I never act like I know exactly what happened. Like you said, I mean, there's rumors, there's this, there's that, but something happened to the point where – obviously this year has been – I would say this. Judging from the sidelines, this year was the shakiest year, clearly. Clearly.
Sure.
I mean, they did have some arguments, which we really didn't see too many times in the past. Maybe they just, you know, would do it just behind closed doors, obviously, but they never did it enough on the field. And obviously, you know, if it's going on the field, then you know that something's bubbling over minorly. But it is.
Yeah.
Lane's not getting off the hook on this one just because we got a quota.
No.
The quota, you know, he has something to do with this. I'm just not going to sit there and blame it all on him. And I wouldn't say, well, maybe we need him, because in the last game he was there and they didn't do shit on offense. Now, does that mean he's a bad coordinator? Hell no. Still means he's a great coordinator, but we'll see if he's a great head coach. That's still to be figured out, but it's kind of weird. It's definitely kind of weird. And it's funny that we do this show and something like that pops up. And then, you know, since the last time we did the show, which is well over a week ago, my Minnesota Gophers had a – talk about fumbling the ball and not handling things properly. We had some issues, you know what I mean? We had some issues, and it was – it's kind of crazy, because the issue – was really communication. And the biggest thing about the University of Minnesota with their football program, if you look at revenue, they still manage to have a solid revenue without a top of the line, not even, you know, nothing like top 10 or nothing like that, but even without like a Badger or even to a minor lesser extent, Iowa, because they're not as consistent as Wisconsin, but we know every 3 to 4 years they make a good run.
Sure.
So the problem is with them, they have that revenue. So they're just like, well, you know what? We really don't need to fork out that much, do we? I mean, we're making money, you know what I mean? So their biggest thing has been putting up the money, you know what I mean? Because it's an investment that will come tenfold when you do it. It just, that's how it works. That's how college football works, and college sports in general, but especially basketball and primarily football. So there was basically, obviously, as we know, the Gophers hired a young coach that a lot of, you know, was on a lot of people's minds. He did P.J. Fleck is his name. He just got, you know, signed in yesterday on his press conference and all that. And he was a hot commodity, and he had did, you know, turn down several jobs in the last year or during this off season so far. But, you know, I just think the University of Minnesota handled it incorrectly with communication. If you didn't like Tracy Claes as a head coach, that's okay. And I remember having this conversation, which is about a little over a week now, because that was not this Thursday, but last Thursday when we're hanging out, you asked me, do you think he'll get fired? And I thought, no. I mean, if he hasn't got fired by now, I don't think he'll get fired. You know, in the way the the athletic, you know, the way Coyle, the athletic director, the way he said, you know, we're going to have a conversation, and we're just going to basically let's have a good talk, get this stuff all figured out, and then we're going to go from there. And he even was talking about extension and all that. So that's he was pretty fake. And not just that, but now we're finding out more information locally that the school actually lied to the press a couple of times. The one time that they were about 30 minutes away from meeting with the team. They were having an official meeting with the team. And they put out a press release like 20, 30 minutes before saying the team is unwilling to meet us, which is like, wow, really? It's just weird. And then at the presser, Marshall, when they did fire him on Monday, at the presser, they might as well have just said, we want to go a different direction. You know, we appreciate what Claes did and Kill did, but we just want to go a different direction. We feel like there's some things we can improve on, and we want to go a different direction. Basically, tell the truth. But you know what he did?
Yeah.
He started digging into things that were happening. Like, he kept saying, we want our athletes to do good in school. Well, if you look at the APR for public schools, they're tied for third in the country. And they've made actually leaps and bounds academically as a football team under Kill and under Claes. So to sit there and bring up academics is ridiculous, because they're actually one of the better public schools in that APR, you know, that graduation rate.
Yeah.
Then they started talking about, you know, and then obviously wins. Obviously, we hadn't, you know, it had been 12 years since they got 9 wins, for Christ's sakes. 3 out of the 4, 8 wins. That hadn't been done since the 30s. So to sit there and say, we want to do this, we want to do that, well, dude, you're getting that. You're getting on and off the field that. You know what I mean? So I thought it was kind of just a shitty way to handle it, when they could have just said, because they started asking them, you know, was it that tweet? Was it the tweet? You know, the fact that, not even necessarily just the tweet, but the fact that he supported the team and he kind of played the middle instead of only supporting the team and only supporting the university. Because after all, he did support, in the end, he did support those suspensions. He said, you know, this is what we got to do. It's going to happen. I'm on board with it. That's what you think is going to happen, then we're going to do it. So to me, at the end of the season, and another thing, Marshall, you know what he brought up? He brought up emails, dude. He brought up, you know, I'm frustrated as a Gopher fan. He said, just like the Gopher fans, he said this, Marshall. He said, if you could have seen the emails I got after that second half of the Badger game, it's like, dude, why don't you just go on Twitter? You know what I mean? Like, are you serious? Do you go on Twitter after the games and see what those people are talking about? Like, to me, to bring up emails, like, dude, you're gonna get emails, man. Your email's available. Don't make decisions off emails. Like, to me, that was a little crazy. If you want to talk about, you know, season ticket holders, now we're talking. But if you're gonna bring up emails, you might as well just go on Twitter feed and see how many people are pissed off, because that's just a dumb. I just thought he handled it. You know what he should have done? He acts as if that Twitter and the support for his team doesn't have something to do with the decision. or just a little bit, but he acts as if he had been making this decision in his mind for a while, and that was kind of the last straw. And he sure didn't play it like that, because he told Clay's before that game in November that his job is comfortable, and they were starting to work on an extension. So I just think the communication, if you didn't like Clay's prior, and I even told you, and I told anybody I talked to, if they're going to get rid of Clay's, they have to get something as good or better. And sure. I wouldn't even say as good. I'd say better. You know what I mean? Not even as good, because why would you get something as good if you know what you got then? You know what I mean? So
yeah. To
me, I was okay with the change as long as they got something that potentially could be better or a step up. It seems like they did that for sure from a recruiting standpoint and all that. But the way they handled it, the fact that when that second half was done and you saw what you saw, if you were so disgusted, you should have got rid of Clay's that moment. And then the recruiting process wouldn't have taken a hit, because it takes a hit. And then for a week, for five straight days, we don't even have anybody talking to our recruits, because they fired the whole staff instead of keeping the staff around and seeing which guy they can keep. Now, luckily, this new guy actually knows some of the staff, because he was under Tressel, he was under Kill, he was under a couple other guys, but he was under Kill at Northern Illinois, so at least he does know those guys. My point is that defensive staff has made leaps and bounds with guys that aren't ranked or very low ranked for recruiting. So what's the point? Maybe that guy wants to keep two guys from that staff, you know what I mean? And just, I don't know. I just think they dropped the ball in general. But in the end, I knew they had a plan, because there's no way this late in the process, Marshall, that you're going to fire somebody without having a plan. You know what I mean? There's just no way around it. If you do, you shouldn't be at your job. You know what I mean? So I figured the fact that they got him in so early and all that. And I am happy with P.J. Fleck. I think potentially he's got a lot to offer recruiting. He's even a cheerleader. He's a better cheerleader than Clay's, like Kill, because Kill was a great fundraiser. But this guy's even more young and energetic, obviously. And you know what? At Western Michigan, right now his recruiting – well, not anymore, actually, because it changed. But his recruiting class was better than four or five Big Ten teams at Western Michigan. So it tells you the guy can recruit. He's known for recruiting. He's known for development. But just in one day, Marshall, six guys from that Western Michigan recruiting class, they flipped to Minnesota. So we just added six guys to our class, and it just bumped us up like 19 spots or something like that. It's pretty crazy how quick that goes. But I'm really happy at the end of this, but man, the communication level was pretty crazy. And they didn't even give them any heads up about the report or what kind of style of report it was going to be, or that they would get an appeal process down the line. You know, they really left the kids in the dark, and then they also kind of miscued things. I didn't like how they handled it, but I'll give the university credit for opening their frickin' billfold and paying a damn coach, because there's no way around it. You know what I mean? You have to do that. Otherwise, your best thing will be a Jerry Kill, which is awesome, but it's not quite elite level. Long story short, though, Marshall, I'll quit boring the fans here with Minnesota Gopher talk, but we're coming. That's all I'm going to say now. Just kidding. But let's get to this thing. Let's get to this thing, okay? Alabama versus Clemson. You know, ever since that, well, some people say the actual performances, right? Because I noticed this in boxing. This happens all the time, Marshall. And obviously, this is under the Rope-A-Dope Radio podcast. And we'd like to appreciate anybody that has been a boxing fan that also is a college football fan or college basketball fan or an NBA fan that does listen to both podcasts, we really appreciate it. And just anybody that only comes on the page just to, for college sports, that's cool too. You know, maybe you hate boxing, you don't know it or whatever, that's cool too. We want to appreciate everybody in the new year. We had a great run. We've had a great run. We're going to keep it going.
Maybe you're one of those clowns that rips Ronda Rousey, like, because it's a cool thing to do now, despite the fact she built up a huge sport. Chris, I know you're kind of like, what's my co-host talking about? Because boxing, UFC is kind of my thing, and I don't really like UFC, but just this 180 spin, and this will be like a 10-second rant, of how Ronda Rousey is the coolest thing ever to now, like, all of Twitter's trashing her. It's like you can't have both ends of the spectrum. So if that's her last fight.
Well, you know what? She can't have it both ways, though, either, Marshall. She can't have it both ways either. She can't say she can beat dudes at higher weight classes. She can't say she can beat up Floyd Mayweather and then be the bully at all times. She's always been the bully, though, Marshall. You have to admit that. She's been a bully.
Yes.
She literally said in the UFC weight classes, not only could she beat dudes in the weight class, she could go up in weight and beat guys in the UFC. So I hear what you're saying. I do hear what you're saying. However, you can't be the big bully and then not expect to get some shit back at you. Not only that, but Marshall, she wouldn't even do interviews. She had a separate weigh-in. They couldn't film her. They couldn't film her at the weigh-in. Only one UFC camera could film her, and it was just in and out, and that was it. She didn't do any interviews. She didn't do anything. So she got babied by Dana White. Meanwhile, McGregor, he didn't show up to one press conference. They kicked him off the card. So I hear what you're saying, but you could tell you're not a UFC fan because there was also people at the time going, dude, you know what? Hold on. This lady is not as good as she says, because she was the one talking shit that Floyd wouldn't even have a chance because she wouldn't even he wouldn't have had a chance to punch me in the face because I just take him down. Well, in her last fight, she couldn't even get close enough to that girl to touch her to take her down. So she was a big fat bully, and so that's what bullies get in this day and age on social media. I'm sorry,
fair.
Man. She said she could do a lot of things. She's sitting there claiming, and the UFC has blame in this because they just called her the best women's athlete of all time. And Serena Williams is looking at her like, huh, really? Because I've been doing this for 20 years. How long you been doing it? You know what I mean? Like, she got built up. But either way, that's neither here or there. Let's get back.
Chris,
but I brought up.
You have to realize though that the lady that Ronda Rousey did fight this weekend probably bench presses more than Floyd Mayweather.
Yeah, but bench pressing doesn't mean anything. She's a striker.
She's a scary looking lady.
She's a striker though. That's what she does. She punches.
She is.
So what do you do with strikers?
I run away.
On the ground. You don't box them.
True.
That's the thing. She basically was saying her stand-up game is good enough to hang with Floyd Mayweather. Well, if she can't hang on the stand-up with this girl, guess what? She ain't hanging with
Touché.
Any boxer.
Touché.
So she's the big bully that got bullied now twice, and that's on her. You know what I mean?
Fair point.
Too bad.
Fair point.
But I hear you. But that's our society. But some of this she had coming. She's not the best women's athlete of all time. But anyway,
agreed.
Let's get back to the nuts and bolts here. The reason why I brought even boxing up in this thing was because sometimes, you know, the old statement, you're only as good as your last performance, right? Your last outing, your last game, whatever the case may be. And sometimes a boxer can just make a statement against somebody, i.e. Pacquiao Hatton, Pacquiao Oscar, right? They make a statement where you're just like, oh my God, did you see that, right? And that's what Clemson did. Clemson made a statement, right? And they put it all together. Everything that we had said, you know, we've been nitpicking them, and sometimes it's been nitpicking, other times it's been like, nah, dude, there's an issue here. But it was nitpicky to an extent as well. And they put on an absolute phenomenal performance. So they're coming in as hot as you can, right? And then you look at Alabama's performance. That was pretty good, especially defensively, and they ran the ball. But with Lane Kiffin leaving, like you said, the adjustments made, the quarterback, looking in the quarterback's eyes, it's a whole different ball game just to jump in there out of nowhere, especially in the title game. And to,
yeah.
It is different. So the combination, Marshall, of Clemson putting the best performance they've had probably as a college football team to go along with Lane Kiffin out the door, which is such a random thing in a national title game. It's very, very rare, unless you're sick or something, or, you know, some mm-hmm. emergency happens, something like that. This just doesn't happen, right? And then there's no fear factor. There's not one fear factor of Alabama, period, for Clemson, because they know last year that they've proven that they could hang. In the beginning of the fourth quarter, they got that lead. I think it was like 28-24 or whatever, and then they just exchanged touchdowns. That was a crazy fourth quarter last year. Somehow they got the score to 45-40 or 45-41 or something like that. So those three factors, Marshall, Lane Kiffin leaving, the absolute phenomenal all-purpose performance that they put on offensively and defensively, and then the fact there isn't a fear factor in there. There's no fear factor whatsoever. We get another chance. What says you about those factors? Because you can start to see even the experts. Technically, I haven't checked the line today, but the line did go actually down a little bit. Because it opened at 7, I saw it at 6.5. I saw it at 7.5 for a quick second. Now it's at 6.5, at least the last time I checked. What says you about this? Because to be honest with you, I got to admit, I was Bama, but man, it is in the back of my head all of a sudden, man. I'm starting to lean Clemson. I got to admit it.
Well, I think sometimes when I break down football games and I avoid my random hot takes and rants and all that stuff, you got to look at, you know, offenses of both sides and defenses of both sides and kind of look at the four overall parts. And of those four parts, Chris, I think that Bama defense is by far the strongest part. And yes, Clemson had a great game, but I still think that they're not as good of a team from the team we saw last year. Now, I could be wrong, because maybe they did, as you mentioned, save that performance for the year and they're going to repeat it. But I think that Bama defense is going to – they're not giving up the 40 points they gave up again. So I still think looking past the points you made, which I agree with, I don't mean some, but my overall main point is that Bama's defense is still freaking good, and I think that alone can still win them the national title. Just because, I mean, Washington, I would say, tried about everything they could in the book. And they had that one hot touchdown, then it was done. Nothing. And I just don't see Clemson having a chance to do what they did last year. And, you know, you mentioned there's no fear factor. Well, that's a great point. I'll counter it by saying, can a team truly come up with a plan that can – put up that many points on Bama's defense again? So I guess I'm kind of looking at
Bama doesn't have the same offense they do either. They're not as good on offense. They're not as good as offense right now.
Their offense isn't as good, Chris, and they just lost an offensive coordinator. And, you know, excluding all the hymns and haws of what happened, Sarkisian can't just walk in the door and be like, all right, guys, let's get clicking. I'm going to fill in for Kiffin, and Sarkisian's been a great coach too, but you know, like you said, the coach mix-up, that's from like a mid-season adjustment. So you'd expect some type of lack of explosive plays or play calling to – something won't be quite as sharp. Bama's offense probably won't be quite as sharp either. Overall, again, I still – I'll say this. I'll be very impressed if Clemson can win, just simply due to how darn good that defense is. I mean, they didn't give up a touchdown the month of November. They had one drive against Washington. And I mean, this is a Clemson team that had a game go down against them where North Carolina State shanked a field goal and Pittsburgh kicked one. I just the strongest part of the whole football game we're going into in this night is defense. It doesn't matter with Kiffin. It does really matter with the game from last year from a standpoint of I think Bama's defense is better this year. So if you are Clemson, if you can find a way to dial up the kind of explosiveness that Deshaun had last year of kind of what has worked in games before with kind of that Manziel or Cam Newton kind of a multi-threat quarterback, and you can do that against Saban in second row, then props, and I hope they win because I'm a little upset about Bama and I'm of what they did to Kiffin, so I'm cheering for Clemson. I want to see it to believe it, Chris, that a team this year can win a game against that defense. I mean, A&M put up a good fight in the first half, second half, offense disappeared. Ole Miss hung about 40 on them in the first 2.5 quarters. When it mattered, that offense disappeared. I mean, we thought Arkansas put up a fight against them because they normally do. That offense this year did nothing. And that's an Arkansas team that's ran the ball like almost 300 to 400 yards some games.
But that LSU team, they put up – oh, forget it.
Yeah. I mean, LSU's defense kept them in tight, which I'd say would be a reason for Clemson to say, hey, that we keep this tight. But I guess my overall perspective is, despite the offensive issues Bama may have, which should occur, because let me ask you this, Chris, just for a fun question. Would you say who has a better defense, Washington or Clemson, just for off your gut call?
Well, that's an interesting point. Well, if you want to look at recent times, Ohio State, what they did to Ohio State was pretty damn impressive. You know, when I saw that defense, let me see. I mean, it's a pretty solid defense. That's a tough question. Mm-hmm. I'm not really sure. I mean, I think front four, I would say Clemson. I bet you they don't give up almost 300 yards rushing like Washington did. Bo Scarborough, man, he had a breakout game. Wow, he had a breakout game. And he's been lingering there. You know, he was a highly rated recruit. And he had a big game, but I don't know. I'm not sure if they'll be able to run for 268 or 289 or whatever on that. I think the front seven's better. I'll say Clemson's front seven's better than, especially defensive line. I'd say it's pretty close to even potentially, but I'd say they're a little better stuff on the run to an extent anyway.
Okay.
Clemson.
Well, I think we'll get a competitive game. I'm not saying anything crazy is going to happen. I would favor Bama by about 3 to 4 points, and I think we'll have a tight game. I should look at this.
So I mean that's pretty good.
Yeah.
You know.
And you know sometimes like when you hear these reviews and people break the game down, I should probably have more than one perspective. But this whole year, we've been like, damn, Bama's favored by like 17 on the road, like against a ranked team, huh? And all the 18-point spreads they covered, whether it be a point or two. So despite, I think there will be a lack of offensive continuity due to Kiffin leaving. I mean, Jalen Hurts has to be like, damn, I just lost my guy. And Kiffin and him have built up a good bond this year of calling plays and producing an offense that, like you said, last game was, you know, not the best, but overall pretty good offense. So I expect a lower scoring game this year. I think I'll be super surprised if you can find a way to beat the defense. I guess I might as well stop now and maybe I can give it back to you and have you ask me a different question, because when I think about this game, Chris, all I can think of is, okay, the points you're making lean towards Clemson. Kiffin's gone. There's a little bit of a disagreement there. It's a new offensive coordinator. Clemson's riding in high off a huge victory over Meyer. He's never been shut out. Bama's offense looked against Washington. So I just made 5 points that make you think, dude, you got to take Clemson, or they're the hot pick, or, you know, and Deshaun Watson's had that guy likes to bring it. But all five or six of those points, in my mind, don't rank above the fact that someone's got to still find a way to knock this defense in the mouth. And if you're Clemson, it's going to take one hell of a game plan, because as great as their offense has been, that Bama defense is like, you know, they hung like 40, 45 on us last year and over 300-400 yards. They ain't doing that crap again this year. Let's go. So I think we have to set up for a very fun game. I can't put anything above my certain number one factor, and that's that Bama defense. So I may be being a little stubborn in a way, but that defense has come through them for the whole season. So
picking Alabama to win the championship's not stubborn, dude. You know what I mean?
I guess you picked them
under the spread anyway.
I guess I just feel, you know, like if for like the NFL playoff games we're about to see this weekend, or like the Super Bowl, it's like, we got this and this and this and this. You look at it from like A, B, and C different angles, but I just can't get over the, dude, that defense is sick. So it's like, you should have like different opinions. No, actually, I'm just sticking to Bama's defense is darn good. But Chris, I will be the first one to come
Washington
on our show.
Washington was in that game. You know, their defense played pretty good against that offense too. This is something that I'd like to talk about. If you can go back into, I mean, I'm not saying game by game or nothing like that, but if you look at that November, I mean, you can bring up Chattanooga if you want. Whatever, that's not, you know, Auburn doesn't really, you know, they by the time they played them, yada, 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 the touchdown thing, I understand that, that is impressive. And this does look like, if it's not his best defense, it's got to be tied or second best, whatever, you know, era so far under his reign. But I also mentioned this sometime, I can't remember exactly if it was at the end of the season or if it was in the last show, but the one thing I'll say is, as far as Bama and their dominance, because that's the only way you can describe them, they've had a couple of close games, but most of them have been dominant. Now, the competition level, right? The competition level. Clearly, this is probably one of their easiest years for competition level. Am I going out on a limb there? I don't think so.
No.
Right? The SEC and that side of it is not any. I mean, what's the second best team in that side of the division? Which would be the second best team in the conference? Who is?
Is
it Auburn?
Old Miss, you know, had a pretty good season until Chad Kelly got hurt. I mean, I think that's a kind of fair, respectable point, but they're not pounding on the walls
to
be a top 10 team either, my friend.
They were 1-2 before he got hurt, though. Right?
I was just going with my gut.
No. Listen, I'm just talking here. I'm just asking. You ask me questions all the time.
Yeah.
I'm asking you questions. I'm not. Like I said, it's not going out on the limb to pick Alabama for the national title game. It's not disrespectful to say, oh, I got them. I think they're going to win. I'd never put, you know what I mean? I'm just trying to give you different views, right? I'm not talking you into it. I'm just plainly talking. So we don't even know who – is Auburn the second best SEC team this year? Auburn, right? And I'll tell you what, Auburn looked a lot better through eight games than they did. Then they shit on themselves, you know. Then they look bad all of a sudden, and they kind of look like a team that we may have thought they would have been. You know, they kind of overachieved. It was kind of a weird thing, you know, the way Auburn went this year. They looked good against Clemson early. Then all of a sudden, you're like, huh? Then they started running the you know what out of the ball. But then it just fell out. You know, it just fell out. They couldn't even get a first down in the, you know, in the second half in that game, you know? So anyway, my point is their competition is not on that level. It just isn't this year. So is this smoke and mirrors? No, I'm not saying it's not, it's smoke and mirrors, but you got to put that into the equation. You know what I mean? And Clemson offensively, it's just doing, they're getting similar results. They're just doing it differently. And a lot of that has to do with, and we talked about running, you know, them running. And last week they ran with Deshaun and Gallium. And one of the reasons why they didn't run, you know, Watson this year as much is because he was hurt. He had that shoulder injury. So they were like babying it, not to mention Mike Williams. This will be, as far as skilled positions, I know Washington puts up a lot of points, right? I know Ole Miss put up a lot of points. Right? I know that. Definitely. They do. But this will be the best talent they've faced skilled positions-wise. If you look at tight end, Leggett, who's going to get drafted, and if you look at wide receivers, they have, I mean, they're pretty damn stacked at that position. I mean, this will be their toughest test in my mind. I know Washington puts up numbers, but they got that Ross, and then it's pretty good. They don't have the skilled players. So the Renfro is a nice possession wide receiver who can stretch the field once in a while. They got guys. You know what I mean? They got dudes, like that one guy says. They got dudes. So I think that Clemson can fit under that 7-point, like you said, a 3-4-point game. I could see it somewhere in there. I could see it somewhere in there. I really feel like some of the factors, and also like I mentioned about that boxing thing, you can't look too deep into that though. And that's ultimately what I was going to come out of that is you can't just look at the last performances because that can mess you up. That can mess you up. And that's why the Pacquiao Floyd thing was always kind of funny to me. And I've always said it to you when you've asked me, do you think it's going to happen? Do you think that and the other, or who I think would win? I always felt it was because of style, it was going to be a one-sided fight. It wasn't going to be an interesting fight because I wanted to see it, because I wanted to see if Pacquiao could do it, but he can't cut off the ring. So it was never going to be that. Well, this, you know, so you can't just look at past performances, especially the last one from Clemson, and just blend that right over and think they're going to come in and play that great. In fact, maybe it is a jinx that they just played their best game, you know, 10 days before the national title game. That totally could be. I just think this is a great game. And you know what? I'm going to go on the other side of it just because, you know, this year I noticed we've been kind of agreeing too much anyway. I think they get in there. I'm going to pick Clemson to win it, but I do think that they're going to sneak under that 7-point spread, and that's where it looks like it's at right now, is a 7-point spread, or at least on ESPN, that's what they're telling me. So, fuck it. I'm going to go Clemson. Clemson by a field goal at the buzzer. Wouldn't that be a fun game? No, I'm obviously, in this sense, I'm usually a guy that is a college football fan first, and then I have my teams, you know, of course. But
in this situation,
I just want to see a great game, a good game. Last year's game was awesome. That was a fun, fun game. So it is going to be tough to move the ball consistently on that Bama defense, hands down. However, I doubt with what Clemson's shown us on defense at times, and especially, you know, their last time out, but overall, I don't think they're going to be able to run the ball and throw the ball for 14 times and get 57 yards in the air and act like that. Like, if that wasn't Lane Kiffin, and let's say that had been Clemson, they won a game against Ohio State like that, you'd mention that. You'd be like, oh, 57 yards in the air, you can't depend on that, this, that, and the other. But, you know, it's Kiffin, so it doesn't count. But they're going to make Hurts at least throw the ball more. So I actually expect him to have in the 20s attempts. I think he'll have, and that's not to say he can't do it, because he has proven that he can do it. I'm not saying they're going to stuff the run, but I don't see him going for 280 or whatever they did in the last game. This is going to be a hell of a game. I'm going Clemson. Screw it.
Well, to discredit that Bama offense a little bit more, I guess I might as well start taking shots at them after what they did to my boy Kiffin. I meant to make a note of this earlier.
Kiffin
in the show,
probably went in there and said, "My wife tells told me that I have to go, so I gotta go. Sorry, guys." That's how he left the place. So my wife says I need to go home, so I'm gonna go home and I'm gonna go be a college football coach. Bye, guys.
Ex-wife. She still lives out in Cali.
Oh, that's right.
But the point I meant to make during the show was that Scarborough, he had phenomenal stats. I believe he had like 170, 180 yards rushing. But I would say probably 100 of those yards were he was like running kind of like on a beach like no one was there. I remember that first one, he broke for like 70 yards. He broke one tackle, which was an awful defensive play by Washington. Back's knee was gone. So I think when we normally think of Alabama football, Chris, bringing the ball on offense, it's all right, we're going to run between the tackles. We're going to pound the crap out of you with Henry or that dude that went to the Saints, not Grisham. God, I'm drawing a blank. But normally Bama's offensive running the ball is like, dude, we're just going to pound you, and we're going to break one eventually at the end of the game. This was just simply, he had about three runs that were kind of like, oh, he's got 7 yards, so holy cow, he's got 50. So I think that even might be a little misleading. Because I remember watching that game, and I was like, dude, isn't that the guy that just broke the – yeah, well, he did it again. But it wasn't really so much that Kiffin called great plays. It was the simple fact that in a national championship game, Washington's DBs kind of, you know, crapped the bed. So, again, I think that the numbers ESPN is flashing is slightly misleading because yards after contact, I mean, and you can't discredit the run the kid had. That 70-yard run where he cut back was sick. But most of the big plays he had was due to simply – got awful tackling by defensive backs. And you'd assume Clemson wouldn't do that again in a national title game, but again, I realize there's pressure. But just kind of my point on that was the Scarborough's going to, I'm sure they're going to talk about him in the game and be like, dude, he had 180 yards rushing against Washington. Well, he had 180 yards, but 100, 110 yards were simply, oh, dude, he tried tackling my shoelaces. I'm gone, peace, and I'm walking into the end zone. So, to counter what you're – or to, I should say to add on what you're saying even more, Chris, of let's see if Bama can run the ball. Because they don't have the Henry that they can use or a regular guy just to kind of pound them. That Scarborough is more of kind of a scat back or a slot back that's going to be tricky.
I wouldn't call him a scat back, dude. He's a big dude. He's not a scat back, though. He's not a scat
back.
I guess he's not a scat back. They got a running quarterback now. So that does help the running game, or it has anyway this year.
I guess he's just not as big as what I'm used to seeing for their typical back. So I guess you're right. I shouldn't call him a small slot receiver, but he's not like 240 and like pounding in between the center. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting. I'm with you. And also, one point that we somehow have mentioned from last year was Saban did feel kind of like, I wouldn't say out-coach, but in a dogfight, so that's when we did the onside kick. The onside kick was the play last year that Saban's like, guys, I felt like we couldn't stop them. And their kicker did the onside kick of the year award and just, I mean, drilled it perfectly.
That's a good
which
call.
Kept it being a two-possession game. But
that was huge,
I mean,
a game.
I remember because, I mean, Saban's a pretty straight-laced guy, and you don't really feel much sarcasm or any BS from him normally. And I remember in that post-game interview, and he's like, well, I felt like our defense wasn't stopping them. I felt like Deshaun Watson was going to keep scoring with us. And instead of being a you're up by three, they're up by four, you're up by three, they're up by four kind of deal, he's like, screw it. We had to go for an onside kick because that's the confidence they'd given them. So, will an old-school guy like Saban in his mind, probably feels that I'm that good of a coach, I don't need to involve trick plays. And I mean that with the utmost respect because, well, you're Bama and you kick ass, you don't really need to. Will we see another one of those gadget plays work? Something that LSU, speaking of Bama's rival, Les Miles did forever, was he always knew to when to call that one special trick play and dial it up. Maybe that will go in favor of Clemson this year. Or maybe Clemson will have that backfire. But yeah, for as close as it was, if we see a repeat game of this year, I could easily see Chris and I leading the show off about of, man, he did the onside kick again. Or could you imagine that fake punt that Clemson ran in the fourth quarter for like 30 yards? God, that really swung the momentum, my friend, of something like that. Because some coaches, the big national title game, we can't call that fake punt. Like, how the hell are we gonna? We haven't done that all year. What are you thinking? It takes a big risk. So you can either look like a fool and have to answer your fans of what in God's name are you thinking, or if you call the fake punt and you run it for 30 yards and you win the game, you're like, oh dude, that I knew it. Yep, call it. That fake punt was. Yep, I knew when to dial it up. It could be a play like that, because that was the one key point everyone talked about when you referenced that game last year, was that onside kick was so huge. So maybe it will be play again that delivers the difference.
He channeled his Les Miles and said, you know what, I'm going to pick up a blade of grass. You know, Les Miles is here Wednesday night, dude.
I heard. That would have been something. And I mean, props to this DJ Fleck. The guy's the young hot name in sports, and he's had a great year. But man, if you'd brought in Les Miles, holy cow!
Talk about fitting into the Big Ten. You know that in 5 to 7, we'd basically get his last 5 to 7 years. You know, that they got the Big Ten title game with him. Period. Like, that's not even a question to me. Because, they just got to beat Badgers, Nebraska, Iowa. You know, we don't have to play. We don't have to beat, we don't have to compete with Michigan State, Ohio State, and Penn State on that other side. So, man, coaching in the Big Ten, dude. It's crazy, dude. It's really big. He's the best recruiter on that side, too, now in the West. I don't know if they'll, See, the thing is, Michigan State and Wisconsin and Nebraska and Iowa – they're never top 20 anyway. You know what I mean? So
no, they do their part and they're good at it.
Yep.
But could Les Miles chew grass when it's like 30 degrees outside? Like in Baton Rouge, you got like that 60s and 70s and that Cajun food. I don't know if you can chew grass when it's like 30 degrees and the grass is hard. I think that might have been the X factor of the climate, guys. It's not right for me. I need warm weather and fresh grass, and you guys are playing on turf, and I'm just not feeling it.
Yeah.
But hey, we are in for one hell of a championship game. Now, again, if you're a college football fan, you're listening to the podcast right now, they do offer those different angles of ways to watch the game. I'm personally not a huge fan, but just to give a little extra knowledge to our fans who are going to watch the game, as I assume everyone will. If you want to watch it on different channels, they have that available. I think this year they got like 5 different ways to watch the game. You can like stream it on your iPad, or you can watch like ESPN2
or ESPN. I like how they do the home
ESPN.
Team, like the home broadcast. That's kind of cool. You know how they'll have like the home.
Do they do that? Because I know they do that for the Final Four, but I guess whenever I hear of them showing it in different ways, Chris, I always think of it just being different
angle.
College football analysts. I didn't know they actually have a home announcer feed for football. I thought it was just for basketball, bud.
Maybe I screwed that up. Yeah, maybe they don't do that. I thought they did it for both. But, yeah, maybe I just mistakenly did that. I don't watch them. Like I said, I watch the broadcast anyway. But I like that. Like, if my team was in it, I may do that. Of course, there might be a team that you're like, nah, I'm good. I don't like those guys. But – that broadcast team or whatever, but you're right. There is going to be a bunch of different angles, that's for sure.
But hey, we built it up. Neither of us think it's going to be a blowout. I mean, we've actually been treated rather kindly for the last couple of years for college football title games. 9 out of 10 times you get a dandy, and we get a rematch. So things are looking up. Obviously, you will get a little bit of the news of the Kiffin angle from the start. You can play the rematch angle. Can someone score on Bama's D? Does Deshaun Watson go out on top? Lots of little fun things to poke at. And obviously, NFL football starts today, too, for the playoffs, which I believe kick off in like 20 minutes. And I'm happy
college
about all this right now.
College basketball next week. A reminder, I said it at the beginning of the show, college basketball next week. We're definitely changing into that, so stick with us all the way to the title game and the NBA playoffs as well. I just wanted to get that in one more time.
Amen. And I think college basketball this year, this might be one of the most fun years we've had in 3 to 4 years, because it seems like the conferences that are strong. And we got some fun kids to watch. So college basketball, which we love to do, may even be a little more enjoyable, especially from my perspective, being a Tar Heels fan in the ACC. That conference is loaded this year. So, and that's all good, because right now I currently don't want to talk about my Golden State Warriors, Chris, because I'm ticked off at them. And,
ouch.
I'll save that rant for another
ouch
day.
That was
Mr. Durant
looked like
realized,
the third quarter. I think the Timberwolves played that fourth quarter, and they thought it was the third quarter, and they said, hey, we're going to put up 9 points or whatever.
I'll just say that Mr. Durant needs to realize this is still Stephen Curry's team, and that ain't happening.
Hey, Curry
had 40. I'm getting a little upset.
Curry went for 40 in the damn game. I mean, how many more points does a guy need? Christ's sake. Why don't he play some defense? All right, let's talk about basketball. We're going to save that. Remember, guys, next week we're getting back into college basketball and then the NBA playoffs after the national title game. Take us out of here, buddy.
All right. For a Lane Kiffin fan, I hope Bama gets smacked and looks like a god and head out to Florida Atlantic and start winning games. Chris and I will be back. We'll break down the national title game. It should be one hell of a game no matter what. Everyone have a safe holiday weekend. Enjoy Washington football. Tune in Monday night for the national title. The College Ball Show will be back after. Take care. Peace.